Welcome to the Financial Bees Podcast, the practice owner's guide to maximize practice value and create personal financial success. Your host, Eric Miller, is the co-owner and chief advisor at Econologix Financial Advisors. He is also a national speaker and published author in financial matters focused on practice owners at every phase of ownership.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to the Financial Beast Podcast for veterinarians. This is where we show you veterinarians how to make sure you're harnessing the power of your practice to build a lot of personal wealth and go out at the top of your game. I'll be your host. I'm Eric Miller, and I'm here with
Eric Gersh.
And we're going to talk about taxes. And we're going to talk about five with a bonus. I didn't mention that. We're going to do one bonus. Tax strategies that that most owners can take, but likely are not taking right now. So you guys know how we feel about the subject of taxes. This is the time of the year right now, which I'm sure you've already gotten some phone calls. I know I got a couple emails already.
Oh, as always, every year.
Hey, my accountant just said I owe $50,000. Can I borrow from this account, or where am I going to find the money to pay for my taxes? Yep.
Without fail, every year there's a handful of those.
So I've already gotten one. I'm surprised I haven't gotten more than that. But hey, it is what it is. But this is where we tell you that, on top of the fact that we are not CPAs,
nope, and
none of the things that we're going to tell you should be construed as
tax advice.
But you guys have to have a different relationship than you're having with your CPA team, your bookkeeping team, whoever's doing that for you right now. If you guys are struggling to get this or having conversations at the last minute about owing $50,000 or $60,000 or $30,000, it's already too late. So you have to meet with your people quarterly, at least quarterly. So you guys can plan out like what the profit of the business is doing, what your estimates need to be to set aside. Make sure that you're setting that aside. Make sure that you've incorporated that as part of your make break number. And so it doesn't turn into a huge issue at this time of the year. Drives me crazy every single year. But I digress on that. All right. So let's get into the tax strategies.
All right.
You ready?
All right. Let's do the first one.
All right.
What's Reddit?
What's the first one?
The employee retention credit.
Is that still a thing?
It is. Yeah. It is. It's definitely slowed down since 2022 a bit. I think a lot of people have claimed it, but I know there's still owners out there who haven't.
Okay, so let's talk about this one, because I still continue to get, you know, Facebook sponsored ads of, you know, ERC companies out there that, you know, will help you recover
$26,000 per employee,
millions of dollars,
yep,
of unclaimed tax credits, right? You could be getting right now.
Yep.
So I think the first thing on this is that number one, it is legitimate.
Yeah, it's okay. A real thing.
Yep. Number two is that there is a right and a wrong way to go about this. And I would say that the wrong way to go about this is to utilize some of these companies that are out there that, you know, started in 2020.
Yeah. If they have ERC in their name, they weren't formed until the credit came out, and they'll be gone as soon as filing ends.
Yeah, they will be gone. So I would be super careful on who you hire to do this. And I would make sure that they specialize in working with tax credits and have done so for a period of time. And even then, I'm still not 100%, but it's better than just these fly-by-night companies that are coming out right now. Another thing too, is that, you know, I think the bigger the company, the more resources they're going to have. They're going to have, you know, attorneys on staff. They're going to have, you know, IRS, ex-IRS attorneys, whatever it would be, that can help you. But definitely make sure you're working with a reputable company and that you involve your CPA with that. Because CPAs, I think, on this one, know about the first part of the test.
Right? Yeah, the revenue portion.
Yeah.
Yep.
They know about that one.
It's black and white.
That one's super simple.
Yeah. You either pass or you don't.
Yeah. It's the second part that I think they... So when you get, I'm not... When your CPA tells you that you are not eligible for the ERC credit because your gross receipts were higher, then they probably don't understand the second part of the test.
Which admittedly is, you know, there's a lot more wiggle room per se there.
For sure. But yeah. It is to the point in the second part of the test is that were you affected by state and federal mandates? Laws, right?
Yep.
Not suggestions.
Yep. Not guidance.
Not best practice. Yep. Right?
Wearing masks, washing your hands, not going
to
work.
Okay. So it had to actually be something that affected your business or you know.
Yeah, if you were shut down or if you were told, okay, you can see surgeries, but you can't see wellness visits. There has to be a true impact.
Right. So, and the reason why most CPAs just kind of ignore that is because number one, they don't know what the state mandates or the federal laws were on that one. And they don't want to be liable for that.
Yeah. And they don't want to spend their time sifting through local state mandates for someone who lives, you know, a couple hundred miles away from them.
Yeah. So that I think is where you would need to utilize someone trustworthy that can help you with this. But at the same time, you know, at the end of the day, you got to defend this in court or yeah. through an audit.
The taxpayer is always the ultimate
yeah.
person who's responsible, whether a company does it for you, your CPA does it for you. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you're the one who's on the hook, not them.
Yeah. And I think that's where most people are just like, well, forget about it. I don't want to take the risk. But that doesn't mean that it's not something that is there for you, but you just have to be careful on how you take it. That's Agreed. All. I think that's Agreed. All you have to do. But I still think there's a lot of CPAs that scared off people that were probably eligible for some of the credit, maybe not all of it, but some of it. And it's worth taking a second look on this. So, all right. Well, that's one. What's the second one?
Cost segregation on commercial real estate.
All right. Let's, this is definitely one. Have you had people recently that have done this?
Yeah. I mean, this is a good strategy for veterinarians if they own a clinic building, if you own the building you practice in, if you own rental properties, it's not going to work on your primary residence. You don't depreciate that. So that doesn't qualify. I'll say that right off the top. But for any other type of commercial properties, rental properties, it has a chance to be viable.
So let's kind of take back to the whole concept of cost segregation. You have a building, commercial building, right? Yep. It's worth $1 million.
Okay.
All right. So they've probably heard of the term depreciation, which is
Just expensing a big purchase over a number of years, essentially.
Yeah. And it's usually about 39 years that, yes. that you'll do that.
For non-residential commercial real estate, you are correct.
Okay. Wow.
Hey, that accounting background's helping right now.
So, and it's just, and calculating the amount of depreciation that you would have over the schedule is pretty simple, right? It's whatever you paid for the building divided by 39.
Yep. Then you take an equal amount each year for 39 years, and then it's considered fully depreciated.
Okay, great. So what would the cost segregation then accomplish? Because the building is not just one big blob of cement, right? It's got windows, doors, floors, plumbing, you know, whatever it is. So what does the cost segregation actually do?
So cost segregation breaks out the building into two categories, real property and personal property.
Okay. All right?
essentially breaks it out. Think of the components, like you said, it breaks out the different parts of the building, and then it depreciates those useful parts over the appropriate useful life. So what ends up happening in short is the structure itself, right? Like the walls, the foundation, that's still going to be depreciated over 39 years, but a lot of the rest of it's going to be depreciated over 5, 10, 15 years. Floors, right? Your floor is never going to last 39 years. You're probably going to replace it every 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Great. That component can be depreciated over 5 years.
Yeah. So this sounds like it's awfully complex to do, though.
It's really not.
Really?
No, it's not.
Well, who does
it? A lot of CPAs do it. And if your CPA doesn't do it, pretty good chance they'll have a referral to someone who does.
Okay. So there's companies out there that can actually come in, inspect the building, and then they'll do a report, right?
Yep.
That'll detail exactly which of the parts of the building we can depreciate faster. And this is how much you can take every single year over the next 3, 5, 7, 10 years, whatever it would be.
Yeah. And the nice part is too, when you do that, your accountant's going to file this form. And basically what it does though, is it catches you up as though you had been doing cost segregation since the beginning. It's called bonus.
Mm, yeah.
So,
okay. What are the benefits on this then? So all of a sudden now I can accelerate. So it doesn't get me any more depreciation.
No.
Right? I get the exact same amount of depreciation as I would have gotten if I spread it over 39 years.
Yep.
But what it does do is it allows me to get more depreciation expense. And why is that a benefit?
Yeah, you're going to get those bigger deductions for probably the first 10 years, if not the first 15. Bigger deductions lower your profit more and give you more after-tax cash flow. So with that said, I mean, and I always hammer this into clients' heads whenever they're looking at doing cost seg is, look, you gotta do something with your savings. You gotta invest them, use them to grow your business. You gotta do something besides spend it. Because if all you're gonna do is just take this extra income and spend it on vacations and furniture for the house and stuff, you're setting yourself behind because you're gonna get 15, 20 years out and now you're gonna have less depreciation than you otherwise would have.
Right.
So you gotta do it strategically.
Yeah. So it'd probably be smart that if you're going to utilize this strategy and you got one building, you know, maybe you buy a building every 2 or 3 years or some kind of piece of rental real estate where you can, you know, do another cost seg on this.
Yep.
Yeah. But where I think it's really beneficial is that it allows, you know, the depreciation expense, you know, you can use that to help offset profits or income that you would have on your business.
Correct.
Right. So that's pretty powerful tax strategy. So those first two are like, I mean, those can be a lot.
Oh yeah. Those are pretty big things.
Yeah. Those are pretty big things right there. And then just one last thing on the cost seg, if you hire a company, they are going to charge you a fee to do that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's going to be what, $5,000-$10,000 or something like that.
Yeah. If that.
Yeah. But I mean, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars of depreciation expense that you would be able to get.
Yeah. And, you know, depending on what the fee rate is, I mean, generally speaking, cost segregation can be viable on properties purchased for as little as $400,000.
Yeah.
Below that, it's not going to make sense. But above that, it can quickly.
No, it's really a powerful one. I wish more people did it. Okay. What's number three?
Number three isn't quite as exciting, but still a viable strategy for a lot of people. HSAs, healthcare savings accounts.
Yeah. So look, I mean, this is one where you have a high deductible healthcare plan and you can set up a outside account, health savings account. And what's the max you can contribute to that right now?
$7,750.
That's no joke. You know, I mean, that's really no joke. I mean, you can... Okay, that's $7,700 and something that you don't have to pay federal income tax on.
And then it goes in the HSA. You can invest it, and then you can spend your principal plus your earnings on healthcare expenses tax-free.
Yeah.
And healthcare expenses doesn't just mean doctors. I mean, it could be buying Advil at Walgreens.
Yeah. I mean, you spend a lot on healthcare, especially as you get older. So it'd be good to be able to get a deduction for it and then not get penalized on the money that you spend on your healthcare. And hopefully it would encourage people to take better care of themselves too, because you should be spending money on your healthcare. You know, it's something that a lot of people don't do. So I would definitely encourage people to put money in their health savings account.
Yeah. And as long as your plan is over, I think it's $2,800 for a family and $1,400 deductible for a single person.
Yeah. Which I think
that's most.
Yeah. I think most people are going to be in that range right there. So, okay. So we got health. So that's not going to be a huge tax taken, but look, I think what we're trying to, the message here is that there's not going to be just like one perfect tax deduction that's going to get you exactly where you want to go.
No, proper tax planning is just going to be a bunch of pieces pieced together, and 2,000 here, 4,000 to savings there, 3,000 here adds up over the course of a year to be a good amount of money.
Yeah. Could be $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 of tax savings that you get. So I don't think that's not a joke. All right. What's number four?
The Augusta rule.
Oh God.
This is one of your favorites. I know.
No, not really. No? I'm starting to get bored with it just because I see it every time I go, someone talks about like advanced tax strategies. They always bring this one up.
Yeah.
So
you're doing the same thing. Huh? You're doing the same thing right now.
I know we are. I didn't put it on the list though. I think you did.
Nah.
Yeah, I think you did.
No.
So, well, I guess this is timely because we just had the Masters tournament. And so, you know, people that have homes on the Augusta golf course, I bet you they probably make what, like 20 grand a day?
Oh, you know? Yeah. I can only imagine what those Airbnb fees are.
You know, so in the code, there is you can rent your house out for 14 days out of the year. And you can get that money basically tax free.
Yep.
Okay. So that's the basic behind that concept. But then most people are like, well, I don't own a home on a golf course, let alone, you know, a famous golf course. So how the hell do I use that for me? So this is where you get creative. And this is where, you know, you have executive meetings, maybe you have staff meetings of some kind that you normally, maybe you go to a restaurant or a hotel or something like that. You can actually have them at your home.
A doctor meeting.
Yeah.
Just, you can even do it. If you have like a vendor meeting, if you hold it at your house, the practice can write you personally a check for use of the space. Practice gets to deduct it as a business expense. And like you said, you don't have to claim it as income if it's 14 times a year or less.
So, and I would say you just can't be a pig on this greedy wise. You know, you can't like $5,000 for me to go do, you know, I mean, I think you got to like
fair market.
Yeah. I mean, you may need to call, you got to have to document this, number one, that you actually had the meeting. Yep. And someone's got to have to keep notes of who was there, what was said. I mean, it doesn't have to be like a 7-page document.
Just meeting minutes.
Yeah, just meeting minutes. Yeah, everyone's got an app on their phone where they can do some kind of meeting minutes. But I mean, let's say it's $1,500.
Yeah.
You know, so what's 1,500 times 14?
21,000.
Yeah, that's not a joke.
Yeah, tax savings on that is probably 5,000 to 7,000.
Yeah, so it is something that you can do. And, you know, I think a lot of people probably aren't doing it just out of sheer laziness.
Yeah, I agree. It's probably one of the easiest things to do. I think one thing to mention, because I get this question all the time, anytime I talk about this to clients, is they say, okay, well, I'm the doctor and my spouse is the office manager. Can we hold a meeting at the house? No. Nice try. It's got to be someone from outside the household.
Wow. Well, that sucks.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that because otherwise, you know, you don't really have a solid case for needing to have the meeting.
Like it just wouldn't be something that happens in a normal course of a relationship, right?
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
But it is something that's available. It's something that you guys can do. It's something that I think you should at least look at. And even if you do 10 days, you know, even if you can't do all 14, if you do 10 or 7 or 5, whatever it would be.
I tell clients, just have a monthly meeting.
Yeah.
12 a year. And if you sprinkle in an extra one or two, great. If you don't, great. At least you're utilizing it.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right. So we've been ARC. We've done cost segregation, HSA account. We've done rent the house for 14 days. What's the last one?
S corps, salary versus dividends.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is just a method of, you know, most veterinary practices that I've dealt with. I mean, 99.9% of them are S corps.
Yeah.
Or LLCs taxes S corps.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But what ends up happening is that some CPAs have told you that the amount that you take out in draws has to have an equilibrium to the amount of salary that you take. And that's not true.
Yeah, to some degree.
It's not. It's not written that way.
I mean, it's not a ratio. Like for every $2 of profit, you got to pay yourself $1 of salary. No.
So what I'm saying is that you pay yourself a salary has to be a reasonable compensation.
Yeah. It has to be fair for what you do on a day-to-day basis. So if you see patients, most of your working hours, if you're just, you know, if you're doing doctor work, you pay yourself essentially what you would pay an associate to do the job.
Yeah.
Take the rest as draws.
So if I'm a veteran, what's a veterinary cost right now? I mean, geez.
I would say probably 100 to 130.
Yeah. So that's reasonable.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have to pay yourself 250.
No.
That's where I've seen that occur, where they have them just like, oh, you got to bump up your salary. It's like, if I paid myself $120,000 as a salary and I took out $300,000 of profit distributions, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I agree.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. So, and that obviously will help offset the, because the more that you pay yourself in salary, what does it mean? You just have to pay a high FICA tax.
Yeah, you got payroll taxes on any W-2 wages.
Yeah.
And then you don't on dividends, profit draws.
Yeah, so that's the benefit of that. So really it's just a way of the adjusting how you're paying yourself to take out more in profit distributions. And if you have a really, really high salary, maybe you can take out the same amount, right? You just got to have more in distributions than you would in W-2 salary. So that's another, I mean, that can say, you know, so I've seen some people that saved, you know, $2,000-$3,000 doing something like that.
Oh yeah. That adds up quick. I mean, payroll taxes are 15% almost. I mean, yeah, I know business picks up half of it, but when you own the business, really, you're paying all of it.
Yep, for sure. All right.
What's the bonus? Let's hear it.
Oh, you know what it is.
I have no idea.
Nope, you know exactly what it is.
The 831B.
Yeah, you got it. Since I got you here, I figured I'd go ahead and just like, you know, let's see if it's something that we want to talk about. So I think a lot of people you know, you didn't see on this list qualified plans because every CPA tells you to put money in your qualified plans.
Yeah, that's right? Basic expectation.
So, you know, the 401k, which is just a part of the tax code that refers to like ERISA accounts. Like these types of tax deferred accounts, the retirement accounts that you guys are familiar with. Well, there's another section of the tax code called 831B. And this is, I guess, first and foremost, not everyone's going to be eligible to do this, quite frankly. And it's probably only going to be for, like, I would say the top tier veterinary practice owners.
Yeah.
This would even make sense to do something like this. And I would say that if you're wondering if you're eligible for something like this, your practice has to do over $2.5 million easily a year.
Yeah.
You know, if not more.
I totally agree.
Yeah, if not more. Because this really isn't a tax strategy. It's more of a risk management strategy.
Yeah, it's a risk management strategy that will give you some good tax benefits.
Yes. So, well, you know, I guess the genesis of this is that, you know, there are big corporations that will either formulate or create their own reinsurance or captive insurance companies to, I guess, what, insure risks that they have that they otherwise would have to pay, you know, another insurance company to transfer the risk to.
Yeah, the easiest example I know of this is the car dealership example, right? You go to the car dealership, you buy a car, you sit down with the finance guy. What's the first thing he does? Tries to get you to buy a 2-year warranty, probably some other stuff as well. But what the dealership does, if you say yes to that warranty, is they collect the payment, they put it into their own captive insurance company where it's invested. And then if you have engine problems over those 2 years, they withdraw money out of the pot. And if you don't, they just, you know, they get to keep that money and leave it invested and keep it growing. But the tax benefit comes in is when they deposit that money into their captive, their 831, they actually get to deduct it.
Yeah. So that's a good example right there. So basically, you know, you have risks in owning a veterinary practice, and there are some risks that you're not paying any insurance for right now. So let's say like brand risk.
Brand risk, a big one is protection from like employee lawsuits.
Yeah, employee lawsuits, cybersecurity attacks.
Yep.
There's all kinds of things that you could set up, quote unquote, your own captive or reinsurance company for and have a legitimate case that you can siphon off dollars that you're otherwise going to have to pay tax on and into your own quote unquote captive or reinsurance company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can put probably 10, maybe even up to 15% of your revenue.
Yeah. So if I have a $3 million veterinary practice, you know, you could put up to 300,000
plus,
you know, yeah, of your revenue that you would not now have to. So where's that money goes over into what?
Your captive.
Okay. And someone's got to help you set all that up.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's a whole cycle to get this off the ground. It's not something you can just go online and do in 5 minutes.
You're not just going to go to a brokerage account and say, I want to start my own captive insurance company.
You have to create the entity. You have to obtain the coverages. I mean, there's a whole cycle that goes there, but yeah, in that example, once that 300,000 leaves the practice, it goes into the captive, the practice deducts it as a insurance premium expense, and then the captive can invest it into anything liquid. So stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, treasuries, you know, it can't go into real estate or anything like that, but basically market investments.
Yeah. And so the benefit then would obviously, you're not having to pay tax on that money that you otherwise would have had to. And
gross tax deferred.
Yeah, gross tax deferred. And then when, I guess, you sell the practice, you would then it would stand to reason you would have to sell or dissolve the insurance company, right?
Yep.
And then all that money would, whatever money is left in there, right, or has grown to, now you have to pay capital gains tax on that.
Yep.
So you're looking for the spread between ordinary income rates and capital gains tax rates,
which can be like 10 to 17%, depending on, you know,
yeah,
what tax brackets you're falling in.
So look, there's a cost to this. There are companies that absolutely that we would suggest to you that you work with that I think do a good job of administering this kind of thing. But you also have to be like committed to doing it for a number of years, right?
Yeah. You don't set this up to fund it for 1 year, put 50,000 in and then say, okay, I'm good.
Yeah. I think at least 100 to 150,000 a year would be.
And I would want to see someone funding it for, you know, 5+ years. If it's less than that, don't waste your time.
Yeah, because there's a cost, obviously, to do it.
Yep.
Yeah, for it to make sense.
Each and every year.
But it's a legitimate strategy. And I know that, okay, I know that all the CPAs are going to say, oh, no, the IRS is scrutinizing these things. And they probably are, right?
They are.
But that doesn't mean that it's not legitimate if it's done correctly.
Yeah, if it's done correctly, you just want to make sure the most important part is that you're utilizing the insurance benefits when the situation arises.
Yes.
If you're just putting a bunch of money in it, taking a deduction and letting it grow, you're going to lose. Mm-hmm. But if you're actively making legitimate claims and using your insurance company to cover risks that you're really incurring, that's what's most important.
Yeah, that's good to know. Okay, man, we gave him 6.
Yep.
That's pretty powerful stuff. All that right there, I'm telling you, that was probably over $100,000 of tax benefits that we gave people right there.
Oh, easy.
Easy, $100,000. So, all right, guys. Well, hope you guys enjoyed that, and we'll see you on the next podcast.
You have been listening to the Financial Beast podcast, where we talk about how to turn practice profits into personal financial wealth. For more information on how to become a financial beast in practice ownership, visit financialbeastpodcast.com. You may also want to call the office at 727-588-1540 to request more information on becoming a client or arrange to have Eric speak at your next event. That's 727-588-1540 or financialbeastpodcast.com.